This is HPR episode 2618 entitled, Yes Odd, First Impressions. It is hosted by Tuku Toroto, and is about 23 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Tutoto talking about their first impressions of Yes Odd web framework.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, Hackapuffic Radio. This is Tuturto, and today I'm talking about my first impressions on YesOdd web framework. YesOdd is written in Haskell, so the website that you are build with it is also written in Haskell. I haven't been using it a lot yet. I have been just building a simple toy simulation about space with it. So basically, a little bit of database work, a little bit of showing stuff on the screen, a little bit of user input. All the basics of a website. I haven't been doing any JavaScript yet with this or any other client-side scripting. But so far I quite like the YesOdd. It's it's based on a controller approach. Like there's a single point of entry for all the requests that come into the system, and then they are routed to the respective handlers, and configuration of that is done with a simple text file. It kind of reminds me of how ASP.NET Core, for example, works in this respect. What I really like about the handlers is that YesOdd on behind the scenes take care of that if you're passing in parameters, those parameters are automatically validated. You cannot stuff, for example, text into a number accidentally. And from that point on, when the data has entered to the system from the request, they are strongly typed because we're working with the Haskell. And that actually strongly typed data is another thing that I really, really like about YesOdd. Everything, for example, when you're loading things from the database, by default YesOdd uses persistent as a backend, but it's if I remember correctly, it's possible to use some other systems too. But with the persistent, the system keeps track of, for example, if you are loading a, for example, in my case, star with a ID. That ID is on the database, it's just a number in the integer basically. And in my case, on the database, stars and planets have IDs. At the database level, they are. The data type is same, it's int, integer. But on the YesOdd side, they are key planet and key star. So it's not possible to accidentally load a star with a planet's ID or vice versa. Same thing when you're updating the data on the database level. The YesOdd persistent ensures that you are not accidentally mixing data types. Sometimes this might feel a little bit awkward. It took me a bit to find out how to load data if you want to load with a hard-coded ID, like that's just a number, for example. you want to get a certain record with that. But I found out there's a function called to SQL key that can be used to create any turn integer into a key and then just use the persistence load method with the ID. And for the Haskell to be able to infer what type you are loading from the database, you might have to provide a type hint at that point. What else? The rendering side, turning the data that you loaded from the database into a web page that is showable to users, Yesod uses a template system. They actually have several kinds of templates. They called it a Shakespearean family of template languages. And I don't know where that comes from, but for example, HTML templates are written in a language called Hamlet. JavaScript templates are in Julius, and the CSS is with Cassius or Lucius. As I said, I haven't done any JavaScript, and I have done quite a little bit of CSS. Mainly I've been doing HTML, so Hamlet templating system. It's pretty straightforward. Like, you have tags. Inside of the tags, you have your data, just like in the HTML page. And then you can evaluate Haskell code inside of the template. Like, if you have a value of something in some variable, you can place content of that variable inside of the template, and that gets rendered as an HTML. For that, then of course needs to be, because the HTML and for example, numbers are not the same thing from the point of view of the Hamlet, so there needs to be a function that does the conversion to the HTML. And Yesod provides most common ones, but if you are, in my case, wanting to render a spectral class or luminosity class or a star, I made those custom data types on my code, so I had to make a two HTML function for them so that the Yesod would know that okay, this one, when given this type of data, this is how I turn it into a markup. Actually, it was to markup, not to HTML, to markup. And you can implement a little bit of logic inside of the Hamlet templates, like ifs, loops, things like that. If you're given a list of things, you can easily loop through that list and repeat some action for each of them, for example, for rendering a tabular data. Neat thing is that on the Hamlet side, the data types are enforced too. So if you're passing a, for example, in my case, a star object here, and you want to display the luminosity class of that one, I have a function luminosity class that takes a star and gives you a luminosity class, and I can call that function on the Hamlet side. And Yesod makes sure that the data that I pass there is actually a star and not a planet, which is really, really neat. While the compile times can be a bit annoying sometimes, it's really nice that the system makes sure that you don't accidentally mix things on the templating side. Whereas in the ASP.NET Core that I've been using too, there it's really quick to change the template that I used for rendering the data, because that doesn't trigger recompilation. But of course, there you don't have a type safety in the same way as you have in the Hamlet. One thing that took me quite a bit of Well, not actually not that much. One thing that took me a little bit of getting used to is that Hamlet, while it has a tags like HTML head, body, H1P, such, for creating HTML, it only uses the beginning tag. It doesn't have a closing tag. Instead, it marks the structure in a indentation. So it's a, for example, it does it in the same way as the Python does with the code. So the Hamlet templates only have the opening tags, and everything that is inside of that tag, or supposed to be inside of tag, are indented from the original level. In the beginning, it might look a little bit funny, but on the other hand, it also enforces you to write a nicely indented HTML, which, in my opinion, is good thing. You can break your rendering side into components easily called widgets, and those can be reused in multiple places, and widget can contain HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And the JSON will take care of when you include a widget on a page that the respective HTML gets inserted in the correct point on a page, and the script, if you are referring to a script, it gets included in the header, and the CSS included too. There's a forms, of course, that you can do. I haven't done much of those, just a one little form that you can use to, when a new player looks into the system, they can select what faction they want to play as. And I found forms a little strange. That's probably would understand them better if I would use them a bit more. But on a form level, there's again the type safety, and you can have a validation, and well, there are like forms. What else? There's of course authentication, authorization. Out of the box, there's several different ways of doing that, like usual username or email and password, or OpenID or what have you. And rolling out your own doesn't look too tricky. For so far, I have been using a system that just lets you to type that I want to be a designer. Well, you basically just type your user ID and it logs you in as with that one. I'm planning to replace that with something else a little bit later, but there just have been so many things to learn, so that I haven't had the time to do that. What I have been struggling quite a bit is that I don't know Haskell that well. I have written a little programs now and then, and Haskell's very verbose error messages are sometimes a bit hard to decipher. And another thing is that the JSON uses quite a bit of extensions, like the type families, templates, multi-param type classes and whatnot. So there's quite a bit of things going on the JSON level. The persistent is used for the database, and the database is, at least in the example that I started, took a space and started modifying, the database is done in a sort of like a model first, like you have one file where you describe your data, what entities you have, what members they have, and from that, and also what relations do they have with each other, and from that, JSON generates you a database and object. So on the as long as you keep using that your database and your object on the code or data on the code side are kept in sync. There's also a rudimentary migration script that you can automatically run, but the Yesod manual warns you not to use that in the production. You should always in production review those scripts and test them and not blindly trust them. But that's about what I have been doing, I think. I haven't deployed my application anywhere yet. I have been using the Yesod development server, which is fairly nice. You start the development server if you're using a stack the build system. I think it's a build system or package management system. Some Haskell thingy that I don't really have that much experience. So you can start a Yesod development server by issuing stack exec --- yesod devel. And that will compile your code, update your database, start the web server so you can start using your website. And it will also monitor your files. So if you change something, it will automatically recompile the project so that you don't have to manually keep recompiling it. I haven't been doing that much of testing. The little that I have been doing has been with a quick check, which is really cool testing framework for property-based testing. Instead of making examples like this, when this function is called with these values, you should get this value back. You write properties in a form that this function called with this type of data will always behave in this way. The canonical example is that for any given string reversed twice will be the original string, or any given string reversed will be as long as the original string. So you sort of rise the abstraction a little bit higher there. It's really refreshing. I have been doing that a little bit earlier, and I tried that with F-sharp as a quick check library. I think it was even called quick check. The Haskell quick check has inspired quite a lot of test libraries. And on the Python or Hi, there's a hypothesis that draws inspiration from the quick check. And I find it really, really neat way that I can just write a generators that will give me, for example, all kinds of planets, all kinds of stars, stars of different sizes and spectral types and luminosity classes, and then run those through some function and check that some invariant thing of function is always observed. It's really slow compared to what I have gotten used to in writing unit tests, but I believe that it's partly because it's new to me and partly because you have to think a bit a lot more general way. It's not enough to come up with a single example or couple examples. You have to actually get to the bottom of the things and find out that this is how this function is supposed to work. Which is, of course, like, one would think that would be the basic essence of development, that you actually know when you're writing a function, how it's supposed to work. But at least for me, I quite often just think in examples or some constraint data and don't remember to think in a general sense. So when you're running those tests, quick check will run those your generators, generate a bunch of test cases. In my case, there's 100 test cases per property, and then check that all of those test cases hold true. And if it finds something that does not hold true, it even tries to come up with a simple example where it fails. And then it reports that, okay, this property does not hold with these values. There's a way of testing the HTML side on a code level, but I only had a cursory look on that. I'm probably going back to that at later point. Probably if I would be doing this for real professionally, I would maybe use some tool that is meant for that specifically, that can run JavaScript and that can actually render things on screen and take screenshots and such, like a robot framework, for example. There's probably more of those that's a bit unknown side for me too. Yeah, that's about it. I probably forgot tons of things, but I find that Yesod initially was a bit intimidating to get started with, but when you got over the initial hump and the example site that it comes with helps you quite a bit there. It's been really pleasurable to work there. I struggle with the very basic things now and then, but I don't think that's the Yesod's fault. It's just a little bit different world than what I have gotten used to. But I really like that it provides, it catches a lot of errors that go, it catches a lot of errors that I'm used to being unnoticed until you actually start using the site. For example, you can have URLs generated in your Hamlet code in a way that it actually checks that Yesod actually enforces the existence of that URL. Basically, you are instead of throwing in a magic string http://something, you are throwing a mark and the name of the resource you're referring to, and the Yesod will automatically find the correct URL corresponding to that resource and insert it there while it's rendering that on screen on HTML. And that is really neat. If you then later on decide to restructure your site and move things around, all those URLs are automatically working correctly. It is really cool. I like that. Automation is good thing when it helps you with things like that. A little bit of JSON that I have been doing, it's relatively easy to serialize your data from and to JSON. But I think that's all I can think of saying about this at this point. If you have any questions or comments, or if you have been using Yesod and have some insights on how to do things, or what helped you to get started, or what were the biggest pitfalls that you wished you had known before starting, do let us know and record your own show on Hacker Public Radio. Okay, talk to you later.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.